Session number 22333, Rule 10.
I wanted to discuss with you when you had come in contact with the Japanese, and knowing that they had better tactics than you, how were you able to cope with that? How were you able to...
We didn't know they had better tactics than we had. All we knew that we couldn't see the blighters. We just couldn't see them. And we didn't know anything about their tactics or anything else. We didn't know about how they outflanked us all. They'd learned all about Malaysia's jungles in Malaysia, and they'd trained for years during before the war. We didn't know anything about them. And then we didn't have a clue about any of that. All we knew that the enemy was there, he was firing at us, and we were firing at him. And I never saw a Jap, never saw one. And they were so well concealed. They fired from behind cover, and we'd fire back. And anyhow, that night we camped up with the cow on the side of a hill, the village on the top, on the plateau at the top. I climbed up to have a look at the village early in the morning, and my platoon was about 20 yards, 30 yards down on the edge of the plateau, and there I saw about 17 Japanese march into this village, come up a track that we evidently missed the night before, and they came up this track into the village. Now these men, they weren't little Japanese men with spectacles and small. They were big men. They were up towards 6 foot, I should say. 5 foot six to 6 foot, big husky men. And how I know that was that afterwards, two of these men broke away and came across and stood on the edge of the plateau about 4 feet or 4 yards in front of me, or 12 feet away from me. And they didn't look at me. They looked out above me, high down on a very steep slope. They looked out above me at the firing that was going on over the valley opposite. And they had come out with some natives and collecting some wood. There's a wood pile just nearby. The two natives saw me and put their fingers up their mouth and shook their heads. And that's how they were. That's how it was. The two soldiers came there. They had their rifles, and I had handed my Tommy gun to the officer, Ross Watts, who was hiding behind a tree a little way down below. All I had was a grenade, and I was ready to pull the pin on that and throw the grenade. Actually, the two Japanese soldiers returned and took it with the natives and returned with the wood to the camp. Now, those two soldiers were big men, much bigger than I was. And I was 5 foot 10, 5 foot 11, but they were big, brawny, strong men. Afterwards, we found out that they were called Marines. They were Marines in the Army. And they were sea Marines in the Army. And they'd done training for been in the war for many years before they came to New Guinea. But that was the first time I saw the Japs, and then we couldn't fire at them. One of the troops with me was most annoyed because we couldn't engage them. And we had to explain to him that the natives were there with their women and children, and the Japanese were in among the natives, about 100, 150 yards away. And that would have been a wonderful opportunity if we could have had a go at them, but we couldn't because of the natives. We couldn't fire because of the natives. Anyhow, we withdrew and went on, and I think it was that night, or next morning, we returned to the battalion. We'd done the circle and we rejoined the battalion. And they were retreating then, pulling back Templeton Crossing. Our brigadier and our commanding officer had done a recce of Myola and the camps around area around Myola, decided Templeton's Crossing and Myola wasn't fit for defensive purposes, wasn't suitable for defensive purposes, so then withdrew to eventually the spot that we called Butcher's Hill, where we made our last real stand on the track. Well, it's not on the quite right, back further, but that is where we made the next stand against the Japanese. And
how intense was that operation, the stand against the Japanese? How intense was the fighting in that instance?
I wasn't there. You mean the battalion was through fighting all the way in the night time? I mean, in some cases, the chap was that the man was that tired. He pulled out. He fell out. See, what we did at night time, we moved up the track in pitch black darkness, and you couldn't see a thing. It was absolutely pitch black. You couldn't see a man 3 feet in front of you. So what most cases we did, we'd get a bit of phosphorus, all this on the sides of this phosphorus on the bark of the trees. And we get some of this phosphorus and smooth it on the pack of the man in front of us, and that's when we see that moving and we follow him. Otherwise we couldn't move. He'd slip back and hit you, or you'd slip back and hit the man behind you. But that's why it was pitch dark all the way. And the troops were dead tired. Now it wasn't in my case, because we hadn't had that trouble. We'd only been a one platoon. We weren't moving out as a battalion or a large company. And we hadn't had that trouble. We'd moved up when we were pulling back from the waterfall. We'd moved up the track in the darkness, and we'd used the phosphors on the thing. But we were moving very slowly, and we weren't being pursued. We weren't worried about the Japs behind us. We just moved slowly. And that's how we got there till we camped that night. But the troops themselves, what I spoke to them about and what they've told and written about it was that they are that weary that, say, a man would fall out and he'd be killed by the Jap. He'd be worn out and he'd sleep on the edge of the track, fall out dead weary, and the troops would move on, wouldn't know he'd gone, and he'd be killed. And that's how we lost men. Mm. So instead of troops, men. But that's how it was, but they were fighting all the way, but the idea was you didn't fight at night time because you didn't see anybody, but at night time the Jap were using that to try and get around us. They saw me came up the track behind. They did come up the track, I understand, behind the troops. I wasn't there then at the start because I tell you I'd been cut off. But they did come up the tracks behind us, but they never pushed forward at night time. They tried to outflank us at night time, but they waited at the, you're fighting the ambushes up the track, and they never did it. And they were ambushed several times by the troops. But they had to come around on the flanks, see the tracks all around. And we didn't know about the tracks, but the Japs found them all right. And they'd outflank us. All we thought about coming back the main tracks.
What was the most intensive operation that you were to be involved with then in relation to fighting?
That wasn't my main fighting then was when we were at what we call Butcher's Hill.
Tell us about that.
And there we held up. Then with the 2nd 27th Sister Battalion that had been held back in Moresby, because they hadn't known how the fighting was going to go on in Milne Bay. They didn't know that whether they'd have to send the 2nd 27th Battalion down to Milne Bay to help Milne Bay, or eventually when Milne Bay was a success and the Japs were beaten, the 2nd 27th was sent up to join our brigade, but the brigade commander had been asking for 2nd 27th all along to help us, because the 3 battalion would have been a different story. We honestly think afterwards we could have held the Japs, but we didn't have enough troops. And the 2nd 27th joined us, and we pulled it into this high hill. That was very good as a defensive position. The only trouble was there was no water there. The water was in a creek right below. And we camped there the night with the 27th forward, the 2nd 14th, that we'd relieve them and our battalion. And it wasn't until next morning that some of the troops went down with their water bottles to get water out of the creek that they'd found the Japanese got around behind us. And that's when the Japanese, that's what they were doing all the time. And that's why we had to keep on pulling back in this night withdrawals to stop the Japs getting around us. And of course, they were miles stronger than we were, many more strong than us. That night, I didn't see them because I was on the flank further on, but the troops saw these Japs moving down with lanterns and lamps coming down the hillside opposite to the village at the bottom where the creek was, and they couldn't do a thing about them because we had no Vickers gun, we didn't have any machine guns, we only had Bren guns and submachine guns, we had no Vickers at all. The Japanese had their mountain guns and they had their mortars and they had their heavy, what we call woodpeckers, which was a very powerful machine gun. And they had those, but we didn't have anything like that. And that's the next morning, three or four boomerangs came over. No, they weren't. And strafed the Japs, and we thought that was wonderful, but they weren't one match of success. It wasn't until next morning that we found out the Japs had got behind us when they killed two or three of the Japs who went down to collect water. And from then on, it was a case of attack. And they gradually got behind us, built up their strength behind us. And B and Don Company put in two attacks to try and clear them to brigade headquarters. Brigade headquarters at Minari. And they couldn't get through. Occasionally were too heavy. Because there again, the Japs were up in the trees, and you couldn't see a blighter in the tree, sniping the tree till he hit you. And they were behind big tree trunks and trees lying on the ground, and they never had a hope of getting through. And they had they were very good at infiltrating with their machine gun, where they cleared a bit of a passage through the timber and set a machine gun up, and as soon as they saw any movement, they just fired the machine gun down the track and stopped any crossing of the track. And we stayed there and camped there one night. I lost more men there and still didn't see any Japs chucking grenades at the Japs. But Japs, in one cove, again got hit in the forest by a sniper. We never saw the sniper. He was only up in the tree somewhere. And it was a case of tossing grenades over the track to each other. And our grenades were much better than the Japs. And
what was the sense of hopelessness in a respect, in regard to the fact you couldn't see them and you knew you were outnumbered?
Oh, there's no sense of hopelessness that I can remember now. It was just a case of we were very, very well trained, as far as discipline going, and that we were with our mates and we knew every one of them by name, and we were with them, and actually that was wrong because I didn't know all I'd previously known all my platoons, but this platoon of the transport, I didn't know all of them by name, but I knew most of them. But we never had a sense of hopeless. We just thought, oh, what are we going to do, sort of business, but we depend so much on command behind us, giving us our orders and doing things.
How was that able to be coordinated, orders in the jungle?
There was no coordination at all. Actually, we weren't in the jungle on top of the hill. We were on a fairly cleared section where the battalion headquarters were, and I don't know what the 2nd 27th position was, because they were on the other side. They'd taken up a position on the other side of the hill. They had very heavy fighting going on. They lost a lot of men, but they killed a hell lot of Japs. I believe they killed hundreds of Japs. The Japs we killed, we never saw. We used to fire at them, and there'd be a quick glimpse of them in the timber. You never knew whether you killed them or not. But the 2nd 27th, they'd put it as they were guarding the main track. The Japs attacked up the track, and the 727 killed a lot. The straight out track. In our case, we were the attackers, and that's how we lost men. But in the case of the 227, they were the defenders, and they were being attacked. Anyhow, it went on like that, and then some of the C Company were killed. Some got through to brigade headquarters, who were down below in the village. And the Japs had got down there. Actually, they had, when the brigade went, brigade commander had went to go to the latrine in the morning, or out in the scrub to a latrine, a Jap had shot at him then, but luckily he hadn't hit him.
So whereabouts are we at this point?
Myola.
You're back at Myola.
Yeah, Myola. This is...
Roughly a bit over halfway.
This is my old, and this is a fogey, what we call Butcher's Hill.
Yeah.
We call a fogey Butcher's Hill.
So that's,
and that's
roughly
where,
halfway.
That's where I left the battalion, never saw it again. Because that night, or the next night, the battalion pulled out, the 2nd 27 pulled out, and I don't know where the 2nd 14th was, I couldn't know about that. But the 2nd 27th pulled out, and they did an out in the flank, and by the time they protected the withdrawal, they were cut off, and they never got into the village in between the Fogi and Manawi. Nauru is further along. But they tried again at Nauru. And the Japs were there, and so then they went bush, and they were, you saw Jim Moyer? Well, he was the mob who was with the 2nd 27th. Well, when we went back, my platoon was detailed to look after headquarter company and the SIGs and things like that, and I went on a stretcher. Became a stretcher bearer. It was pitch dark at night time, dark as anything. And I had a wounded man on the stretcher, the four of us on the, three other men on the stretcher. We'd made the stretcher ourselves, and one of the sides of the stretcher was a log. It wasn't a light bit of wood, it was a heavy log. It was all we could get, and we piled some blankets over that. And put the sap on. He was badly wounded. He has his wound in the thigh, and we put him off, and we carried him in the dark, and we went down the side of a hill. There was no track. Went down the side of a hill, and the hill was very, very steep, and we had to sleep. We slept at night in patches, but we had to sleep wrapped around the tree so we didn't slide down the hill. That's how what we put our stomach down the tree, our legs down one side, and our arms around the other. And the stretcher, we did the same with them, put it against two trees, and that was, of course, the chap on the stretcher. We had four stretchers. One chap was shot through the throat, and he had to be face down. He eventually died. And then there's this other chap I was carrying. And anyhow, we got away first light in the morning again with the stretchers. And about midday, we met the 2nd 27th, who had been done a circle. And we handed over the stretchers to them. We went with them till mid-afternoon. And then we tried to get into Nauru, and we couldn't. The Japs were there. The 2nd 27th had sent a crowd forward and found the Japs were in Nauru, and so they didn't attempt because they had quite a number of wounded soldiers, wounded men, and that was their main task. The battalions decided that they wouldn't do any fighting like that to force their way in, they'd look after the wounded. And so I heard afterwards.
At this stage, you're on the withdrawal. You mentioned you weren't to call it a retreat. What was the feeling of knowing that you were withdrawing? Describe the process.
We were happily fed up because we had the stretchers and we had very little hope of sort of anything else, and we were just down, very downcast, I think. We were on our own. We had nobody protecting us. A few of us carrying these stretchers along by ourselves. All the rest of had been able to walk quickly, and they'd moved out during the night, and we were left behind. And there we were lugging these stretchers along till we came on the 2nd 27th. They were actually behind us. Mm. And they came around and caught up, and we were very glad. But we were very, very downcast then. We didn't know what to do. Of course, we couldn't leave the stretchers. And I don't know, but you probably heard about it later on, that the 2nd 27th decided they'd leave their stretchers. Now, this had happened previous with the 2nd 14th. In the case of Zuava, when the 2nd 14th had been overrun by the Japs, and then their first engagement, and their CO had been lost, and the company had gone out and carrying wounded, and they'd done also left the track and done a circle, and they decided that they'd leave the wounded, go on and see if they could get help to come back, carry the wounded. And eventually, when they did come back, they found all the wounded there, but they had all been killed by the Japs. The Japs had just killed them, maimed them. It would have been that had happened. And in the case of the 2nd 27th, they carried their wounded for a certain way, and then the walking wounded and the ones that could move, they went on with the 2nd 20th Battalion. Eventually finished up in Moresby, but the CO of the 2nd 27th had decided that the badly wounded he'd leave behind in a village, unoccupied village, and no natives there, an unoccupied village with two stretcher bearers, RAP men, who had volunteered to look after the wounded, and that's what happened. These two stretcher bearers stayed with the wounded. I think one of the wounded eventually died. Or two wounded died, and eventually the 2nd 27th had got help to come back and find this man in the village and carry them out. But that's what happened to them. Mm-hmm. In our case, we were very, very glad to get rid of these things. We also had walking wounded with us, but they could manage and keep up. And we did the circle, never saw the battalion again. We could hear firing array on their right, which you couldn't get to them. Through the jungle, and we got on a track, a very bad track, and I think for 6 days we followed that track. We had no tucker after the first day, and it was hell. I mean, we just got hungrier and hungrier. Never got thirsty, just got hungrier and hungrier until it cut out. You didn't get hungry, you'd start to get thirsty, and that's how it was. It rained at night time very heavily. I handed my hat over to a bald-headed chap because the rain was giving him such a headache, because I had a bit of hair on my head and it helped me. But it was tough going. Mm.
Did you see that what you'd have actually achieved anything by going up the track and then having to make this withdrawal?
Well, we didn't have a clue. The thing was that we didn't have a clue. We were just obeying orders all the time. We just told to withdraw, we withdrew and saw the business, and going up the track was the same. We were going up to fight the Jap, and he outmaneuvered us, and that was it. But when we eventually got into Moresby, of course we camped near Moresby, we found out what had happened, how they'd been held, and we'd heard the artillery firing on the ridges, so we knew something was going on in a big way over there. But we couldn't get across to them. You'd never get through that jungle. And one of the places we struck there, down the hollow, there was a bamboo thicket, the only one I'd seen up there. And these bamboos, I suppose, were 4 and 5 inches thick. You couldn't get between them at all. You couldn't even walk between them. You couldn't crawl between them. It was impossible. And when you got, we were on a track on a hill, and that was it. Everything in New Guinea is tracks, and they're all on top of hills. They run around in the ridges. That's how they were. But the I did very little fighting, I suppose, in the whole show. I only fought, I'd say, in my machine guns four times in the whole show. But the other chaps, of course, they used it a lot. But I didn't. I wasn't unlucky. I didn't encounter the Japs. Or they didn't encounter me so much.
As I understand, MacArthur was seeing, you know, the situation with the Australian troops is not doing a particularly good job. How did you feel about?
Never knew anything. I never heard MacArthur's name. Never knew anything about it. Never seen a sign of him. All we saw was the Americans coming in onto the strips. We never saw them. We never saw an American in Moresby. And then as we were going up the first big high mountain, we could look down and saw these American planes down there. They were eventually strafed and bombed because our CO had, and somebody else had mentioned it to the Americans, who were not trained in any way. They were worse than we were. They had grouped all their planes together. They hadn't separated them, and when the Japs came in, they just cleaned up the whole lot. They were the planes that were supposed to supply us at Myola, but of course they never eventuated until they got two or three more from Australia. But
did you see that what you were doing was a good job?
No, we didn't have a clue. We didn't have a clue what we're doing was a good job or not. All we knew that we had to defend Moresby. Eventually, we'd come back to Moresby. We'd have to defend that, and that's how it was. We wanted to get back to Moresby, but I had a wounded man behind me, and he wanted to go on his own. He's wounded in the shoulder, and I dropped back on these tracks. I say, I don't know how long on there, 5 or 6 days. We tried eating. We came to a native garden, tried eating or chewing the yams, and they were terrible. They were a little nourishment in them, but we had no tuck at all. We were just starving and very weak. We were weak. Actually, when I came back, I went to a field hospital for 4 or 5 days, and that's when I got my commission, actually. And we were weak, but we had no idea what was going on. The Americans or anything else, we didn't know about them. Didn't have a clue. Never saw an American. Not one.
There was this situation, as I understand, that command just didn't know the situation on Kokoda Track.
Oh, well, they didn't. I mean, they back in Moresby in those places, in Australia mainly, not Moresby, they wouldn't accept the conditions. And when they eventually sent up the troops that cleaned up the Japs, drove them right back into Burna, they didn't realise that we had a very good general, General Allen, who we'd had in the Middle East. But he saw the situation. He wasn't willing to throw his troops in like we did at Gona and have them slaughtered. And the heads back in Australia wanted to throw them in and get them slaughtered like they did in France. Well, Allen wouldn't do that. He was he was clean on beating the Japs, but he wanted to beat them on his own terms. And he took a long time. Well, eventually they pulled him out and handed over to another commander. And that went on all the way. They back in Australia and New Guinea, they had no idea. So silly. When we heard there, we were told, this is one thing we were told, that the hill was like Thermopylae. We're now in the Middle East. We had heard about Thermopylae, that the Greeks had defended in the way back in the Middle Ages. And we heard about this gap up there in the hill, and we understood that we had to go up there and defend this gap and drive through this gap. And there's no gap at all. It was just a raging hill with a slight hollow in it where the planes used to fly through to save up a couple of 1,000 feet in height. But there was no gap there. It was absolutely absurd. Nobody knew anything about it. And I understand, we heard afterwards, that even when they went up the second time, they sent up fresh meat to the general and his general staff. Well, the meat went off in about 2 hours. It was stinking. but they didn't have a clue. And they took quite a long time, and luckily the generals and brigadiers learned what the tracks were like and didn't throw the men away. And there was no need to throw the men away.